thirst had taken over. He needed a drink. Rappaport's secretary came in and announced that the judge was ready to see them. Busy signing papers, Rappaport took a full minute before indicating the two empty chairs that faced him, still not looking up from his desk. It was September, and the weather was warm, but the judge had on a three-piece suit with a gold chain looped through the vest and black judicial robes open over that. A few strands of gray hair had been carefully combed and plastered across a white scalp. He could have been a child in the tall chair. Rappaport read from the paper in front of him.
Miniatello versus Weber Properties.
When he finally looked up, his expression was a scowl.
Where are your clients, counselors? Where's Mr. Miniatello? Where's Mr. Weber?
The voice was nasal, aggrieved.
Surely when he scheduled this meeting, my clerk reminded you of the standing order? Your clients must be present any time there is a settlement conference before a justice of the Supreme Court. Mr. Emmert, you have practiced here long enough to know that.
I have consulted with my client on the point, Your Honor, and he has agreed to waive a personal appearance.
This is not a requirement that can be waived, Counselor. I want your clients here. And you, Mr. Seeley, what about your client? Is he waiving, too?
He was detained, Your Honor, but he's on his way. Seeley had made a detour from his room at the University Club to his office on 6th Avenue in Midtown to collect a briefcase, and there had fallen into a long conversation with one of the mailboys about the Mets losing a doubleheader the day before. Leaving the building in a hired car, he forgot his promise to pick up Gary Miniatello at the sculptor's loft so they could review strategy for the settlement conference. Only when he was walking up the granite courthouse steps, already late for the meeting with Rappaport, did Seeley remember the promise. He made a rushed call for Miniatello to meet him in chambers.
So we shall sit here and wait for Mr. Seeley's client.
Seeley had dealt with difficult judges before, but he had the feeling that Rappaport was going to be a special challenge. The judge swiveled in his chair to Emmert.
You're Fordham, aren't you?
2 years behind, Your Honor. Your name still echoed in the hallways. All the time I was there, the professors were still talking about when you destroyed the Columbia team in the moot court competition.
Rappaport beamed.
Harvard, too. In the finals. The Jesuits field a fine moot court team. Where did you go to school, Mr. Seeley?
Canisius.
The Jesuit school upstate?
Seeley nodded.
I didn't know they had a law school.
They don't. I went to college there.
I was asking where you went to law school,
Rappaport said. Seeley knew that's what he had meant. Harvard.
I thought so. An Ivy Leaguer.
The judge paused to think if he could make something more of that, and instead made a show of studying his wristwatch and adjusting the cuff of his shirt.
I have a heavy schedule today, counselors, and unlike you, I'm not paid by the hour, so why don't we get started? You can fill your client in when he arrives, Mr. Seeley. Mr. Emmert, I want you to brief your client, too.
He searched through the papers on his desk.
Correct me if I am in error, counselors, but as I understand it, what this little tempest is about is that your client, Mr. Seeley, sold one of his sculptures to Mr. Emmert's client, and now he wants to stop him from putting a coat of paint on it.
Miniatello's sculpture consisted of a dozen or so rusted structural girders exploding through a brick wall in the lobby of a Park Avenue office building. The girders' extremities twisted and shredded as if from a violent explosion. The building, owned by Emmert's client, had been on the market for more than a year. A buyer had at last made an offer on the property, but insisted that the sculpture be cleaned up and painted. Miniatello objected. None of his works had ever been painted. To do so, he told anyone who would listen, would violate the integrity of his vision. Seeley didn't care much for the sculpture or for Miniatello, but nonetheless won a temporary restraining order enjoining any alteration of the work. His next step, unless the Honorable Randall Rappaport forced a settlement on him, would be to go to trial and win a judgment making the injunction permanent. Seeley had been waiting years for a case like this. The opportunity to establish a foothold in New York law for the principle that artists have moral as well as economic rights, that no one, not even the owner of a work of art, can alter the work without the artist's consent.
If Your Honor will, so we have a straightforward clash of interests here, Rappaport said.
His chair squeaked as it rocked in a steady rhythm.
Your client's aesthetic wishes on the one side, Mr. Seeley, and on the other side the interest of Mr. Emmert's client in selling his property. What's not clear to me, Mr. Seely, is how your client has been injured. I would be interested in hearing what precedents you think you may have on your side.
If the judge had read Seely's brief, he knew there were no direct precedents to support his position. But neither had there been direct precedent for any of the great decisions that had challenged and ultimately reversed the authority of existing law. For Seely, that was the great beauty of American law. If you were persistent, prepared thoroughly, and had justice on your side, you could change the law. Your Honor, federal law already.
This is not federal court, Counselor. This is New York Supreme Court.
Seely's thick hair felt matted as he tried to massage away the throbbing at the back of his head. He was parched. Just speaking felt like fingernails clawing at his throat. The meeting was not going as he had planned it the night before. It's a fundamental principle of decency that you can't take away an artist's right to the integrity of his work. Emmert said,
What about my client? Maybe he's an artist, too. Maybe he thinks this piece of junk looks better painted.
That's a foolish argument, and you know it.
Seely hadn't intended it, but his voice had risen.
Painting someone else's sculpture isn't art.
Rappaport smiled.
You must forgive Mr. Emmert. He lacks the advantage of a Harvard education.
Seely tried to think of a smart remark that might turn this bond between Rappaport and Emmert in his favor, but realized he was lost.
Still, the words flew out.
This case isn't just about sculptors. It will set a precedent for painters, writers, musicians.
Why was he having such difficulty controlling his voice?
It makes no difference if the work is Picasso's Guernica or the image some prehistoric man painted on the wall of his cave.
His voice rose perilously.
A work of art, any work of art, touches something sacred in us. To violate it...
Words that had seemed so eloquent the previous night now tasted like paper in Seely's mouth. He gagged on them and hated himself for believing them.
I don't know what they put up with in federal court, but I will not have voices raised in my chambers. Do you understand that, Counselor?
Rappaport's voice was level, his chair still. He waited for Seely's acknowledgement before continuing.
Look, let's be practical about this. If ever there was a case that should settle, this is one. On your client's side, Mr. Seely, there are some injured sensitivities. That is understandable. As you have already acknowledged, there is no precedent, but I'll grant the juries can be unpredictable. Also, the appellate process may fail to correct an error by the jury. So I expect,
he turned to include Emmert,
Mr. Emmert might be prepared to offer a reasonable figure for settlement. Reasonable, but not exorbitant. After all, Mr. Emmert's client presumably paid the artist good value when he purchased the sculpture.
Your Honor, that's correct, Emmert said. My client paid top dollar.
I would be very interested to hear what Mr. Emmert's client is proposing as an offer of settlement.
My client, said Emmert, is prepared to offer, and this is solely as a gesture of goodwill with no admission of liability on his part, the sum of $50,000. I'll be honest with you. My client needs to sell his building, but this is his top figure.
The judge pressed his palms together, steepling his fingers under his chin.
This is a generous offer, Mr. Seely. I would strongly recommend that you advise your client to accept it.
Seely was certain Rappaport already knew what the settlement figure would be. The two sons of Fordham had talked. Seely nodded at the chrome carafe on the side table.
Is that water in there?
Help yourself,
Rappaport said. Seely was pouring water into a glass when the door in the back of the chambers opened and Gary Miniatello came in. For the first time that morning, the judge rose from the too big chair. He greeted Miniatello with a two-handed politician's handshake and introduced Noel Emmert.
It is an honor, sir, to have an artist of your stature in my chambers.
Miniatello shot a questioning look at Seely. He didn't know whether this was real or a put-on. Seely didn't know either. Then he saw what Rappaport was up to. The judge was going to seduce his client into settling. He nodded to Miniatello to take the chair next to him.
So, Mr. Miniatello,
Rappaport was back in his chair.
We have been having a little discussion of how best to approach this case. Mr. Emmert and I believe, and just now we were trying to persuade your lawyer, that the most appropriate resolution, strictly confidential, of course, this is all off the record, would be an honorarium of sorts, a proper recognition of your efforts and your reputation. that would at the same time preserve...